Welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. I'm Jonathan, webmaster, host, and chief operating dad of www.psychedelicparenting.org. With me today is Renaissance man Martin W. Ball, PhD. He's a writer, independent publisher, energy worker, visionary artist, and musician currently living in Ashland, Oregon. His approach is unique in that he sees the tension between duality and non-duality as not a spiritual or religious issue, but as an energetic issue that can be best addressed through the intentional use of powerful entheogens such as 5-MeO-DMT. Martin earned his BA at Occidental College in Los Angeles in 94, where he studied philosophy and religious studies, and then went on to graduate school at UC Santa Barbara, where he earned his MA and PhD in religious studies in 2000 with an emphasis on Native American traditions, philosophy of science, and religion. Currently, Martin works as an adjunct professor teaching religious studies in Southern Oregon. He also provides personal healing and energy sessions and enjoys servicing others as the ultimate reality coach, he says, for those who are truly ready to transcend their egos. Martin is the founder of the Exploring Psychedelics Conference in Ashland, Oregon, which is in its second year and will be happening this Thursday and Friday at Southern Oregon University. He is also the creator and host of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast since 2009, which, on a personal note, it's been a huge inspiration and a source of knowledge for me since my own reintroduction to the world of psychedelic medicines in 2012 after like a 10-year break. Martin is also a prolific artist in the fields of writing, music, and visual arts, and his work can be seen on his Facebook page and at www.martinball.net. He's also the husband and a father of three. Martin and I were introduced to one another by a mutual friend about a year ago, and Martin was gracious enough to interview me about my work with the Ethnobotanical Stewardship Council. Since then, he's made himself available for podcasting and website advice, as well as introductions to important people and generalized brain picking, for which I continue to be thankful. So welcome, Martin. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Sure. First of all, let's just remind everyone in the Northwest about Exploring Psychedelics 2015, which you created and where I'll be speaking via Skype on Friday morning. Tell us how people can be a part of this event and what they can expect.
Well, it's a two-day event that's being held at Southern Oregon University here in Ashland. One of the things that I like to plug about this event is that unlike most other similar kinds of conferences and gatherings that happen, we're holding this for free. You know, a lot of these places charge actually up to several hundred dollars for people to attend a conference like this. And, you know, I wanted to make it available to the public here in Ashland. And honestly, most people around here, they don't have the money to spend on something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't have an extra $300 to go listen to a bunch of speakers. So that was my intention, was to keep it free and open to the public. And that also means that we have it held during the week, because that's when we can actually use the facilities at the university without having to pay many, many hundreds of dollars to the university to use their space there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit inconvenient for people that it's Thursday and Friday and not on the weekend, but that's what allows us to bring it for free. And we started this last year. It was actually the brainchild of another instructor at SOU, mm-hmm. where last year he sent out an email to a few different people on the faculty who he thought might be interested in something like this. And he said, hey, would you guys be interested in having a psychedelics conference here at SOU? And for whatever reason, maybe because I'm so far out of the closet, I really don't care anymore, that I just responded right away. And I said, well, of course, absolutely. What can I do? Mm-hmm. And nobody else responded. You know, everybody's secret and hiding and afraid to tell people what they're actually interested in and what's meaningful in their lives, which is something that boggles my mind. But anyway, I was the only one who jumped on it. So we had a relatively small one-day conference last year, and all of our presenters were local.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, the other co-founder, Matt Vogel, said that he was feeling a little bit burnt out this year. And I said, hey, well, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So I bit off a huge chunk, and I've basically been organizing the whole thing.
Wow.
for this year. And at the moment, you know, we've got 19 speakers that are coming.
That's exciting.
And we've got people presenting from all across the United States, Canada, Mexico, Australia. We have a few people like yourself who are going to be Skyping in. And it's a wide range of topics that's going to be covered. And we're also going to be showing Rak Razm's film, Aya Awakenings. And then we'll have a little Skype-in talk with Rak after that. And just from what Facebook tells me, there's going to be a lot of people at this event. I mean, right now at the Facebook event page says something like 250 people, which for here in Ashland, that's a really large number mm-hmm. of people attending an event. You know, Ashland's a really small town. We only have population of like 20,000, something like that. And I'm actually expecting this is going to be a lot of people coming up from California and people coming down from Portland and Eugene and also Seattle and possibly even Canada. So I'm really excited about it. It's happening in just a couple days, and I'm kind of looking forward to when it's done because it's been a lot of work putting all this together, a lot of communication, you know, just a lot of emails back and forth and trying to organize and people looking for places to stay and, you know, where do I park my car? And, you know, I'm the only one answering the emails, so they all come to me. So it's definitely been a lot of work. But it's going to be spectacular. We've got a whole bunch of local visionary artists who are going to be showing their artwork there. And we're going to have information booths and tables. There'll be books for sale, music. And then when the whole thing wraps up on Friday night, my wife, Jesslyn, and I, we have a band together called Fractal Love Jam. And we're going to be playing at Oberon's Tavern downtown. And that's also a free show. And it's been a few months since Jessel and I have put on a show, so I'm really looking forward to that because I love getting out there and playing our songs.
Right on. Wow. Well, man, that sounds really exciting. I hopefully lots of people can come check it out. And, you know, I've been wanting to come to Ashland for a good many years, and I was disappointed that I wasn't able to fly out for this. But, you know, Ashland seems like a great, great place. And so, you know, that's another opportunity for people that are going to, if they're driving up from the Bay Area or Northern California, is that this is a great city to check out, and it'll be a character all of its own in this event, I think.
I think so. Ashland's a special place. I mean, there's a lot of spiritual frou-frou stuff that goes on here, but the people are great.
Yeah. Right on. Well, when I asked you on, you said that you were especially interested in my discussion with my first guest, who we called Mark, around the five psychedelic family values, which incidentally will be the focus of my talk on Friday. And you were especially interested in our discussion about radical honesty, which you said ties deeply into your own work. Tell me about what radical honesty means to you in the context of your work and, more importantly, in the context of your family life.
Wow. That's such a big question. gosh, where to start? Oh, my goodness. Honestly, for me, there we go. Honestly, honesty is the most important thing. I mean, when people ask me, like, how do I prepare for, you know, a psychedelic experience, or, you know, how do I integrate it afterwards? The number one thing that I always tell people is be honest. Mm-hmm. Be honest with yourself internally, and be honest with yourself externally. And so I'm a non-dualist. So everybody out there is just another version of you, mm-hmm. whether you really realize it or not. Mm-hmm. And so honesty is both internal in terms of what you are mentally committing to inside your own mind. Then it's also related to the expressions that you give to other versions of the self that apparently exist exterior to you. And the reason why honesty is so important when working with psychedelics, I mean, if you really want to make genuine progress with psychedelics, mm-hmm. you can BS yourself as much as you want. And, you know, the psychedelics can play along with that mm-hmm. to some extent. But if you really want to make progress, it's about being honest, because working with psychedelics is primarily an encounter with energy. Mm-hmm. And energy is real. It is the ultimate standard by which anything could be judged as being real. Is right. there an energetic signature? Is there an energetic presence to what I'm feeling or whatever? So energy is real and reality is honest. And so by aligning yourself with honesty, you are more prone to be real and get something real out of your experiences. Nice. And it also relates to the fact that the human ego, the sense of self, the artificial sense of self that we all develop within ourselves, is based on a fundamental lie. It's based on the lie that I am myself. I am the person that I think I am. And that's not true. That the ego is just a character that we are living out our lives through, and it's not who we are. Mm-hmm. And so there's a fundamental lie that's there at the very base, or maybe it's a little harsh to call it a lie, but certainly it's a misapprehension. It's a misconstrued construct that we are not who we think we are. And then we build all of these habits and expressions and ways that we allow ourselves to express energy and to embody energy around this fundamental delusion that we are who we think we are. Mm. And so there's a dishonesty based on a dishonesty based on a dishonesty. And that just creates these warped and distorted characters that are going around interacting with each other that are not being truthful with themselves and with others. So honesty is the most important thing that anyone can do. And
I agree.
It's tricky because this also means it being honest at the interior level, something that I see that I see is really a large problem in many spiritual communities and people who identify as being spiritual, that through their ego, they create these narratives for themselves that I am this kind of person or that kind of person or this kind of healer and I work with this or that. And so people create all these narratives for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they're internally, they're committing themselves to things that aren't fundamentally true. And they're using those to define their identity. Mm-hmm. And it creates an ongoing narrative of the self. And for me, I just don't see that as productive because mm-hmm. it's not honest. And so people present images of themselves rather than being authentic and genuine. And they try and enact these roles that they're creating for themselves. And it's phony.
Yeah.
And that it's rather endemic among New Age spiritual communities for people to invent these identity for themselves and feeling in doing that they're just being themselves when they're not really being themselves. they're being this fictitious character that they've created for themselves. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's something that if people really want to advance and really get to know themselves, they've got to let that stuff go.
Yeah, I agree.
That it's an artifice. Mm-hmm. And it's scary for people to move beyond that because then they don't know, well, if I'm not this character, then who am I? Well, spend some time investigating that.
Yeah.
Rather than using psychedelics or whatever your spiritual practice is to cultivate your character, ask yourself the question, who am I? What am I? And how do I know? That's really the key, is that in creating fictitious characters for themselves, people grab onto things that they like or that they want to be true, but they don't actually know are true.
Yeah.
At a fundamental level, mm-hmm. that they're not asking the deeper questions. And so that's where I'm always trying to point people towards is, well, what are you really?
Yeah.
If you're not who you think you are, and if you're not what you think you are, then what are you? And how do you know that? How are you going to explore that? How are you going to investigate that beyond all of your characterizations of yourself? So
yeah.
Honesty is the key to all of this. I think I only answered part of your question, but
no, that's
I rambled
okay.
for a little bit.
No,
there,
that's so great. Yeah. I'm 100% in tune with what you're saying. I used to live in a spiritual community in Northern California, and I worked at a metaphysical bookstore, and there's so many people in the New Age world that you're right. They sort of have replaced one false identity for a new false identity. And sometimes that new false identity can be more sinister simply because it masquerades itself as truth. Whereas, you know, if you're just a businessman, you know, working in Madison Avenue or something like that, selling cigarettes to people, you know, you don't have a lot of high ideas about your spiritual evolution. But when we create these false identities around being spiritually evolved, they're much sneakier and harder to slip off of. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're wrapped in clothing of, oh, I'm compassionate and I'm, you know, I'm doing good for the world and I'm a light worker. And, mm-hmm. you know, people use all these labels for themselves. And oh my goodness, it's so exhausting sometimes yeah. dealing with people who are like that, because yes, they have replaced their average ego with a spiritually sophisticated ego, and it's based on all these ideas of how they should be rather than how they really are. You know, I see a lot of people who work in spiritual circles who, you know, they get these notions that, oh, you should think positive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, you should think the thoughts that you think. Really.
Yeah.
You should observe them, and then you should express them openly. And it doesn't matter if they're right or wrong, if you're doing it the right way or the wrong way. But I see a lot of people editing themselves to present this picture of, oh, well, I'm really miserable, but it's all perfect, so I'm just going to smile and suck it up. It's like, no, you know, if you feel like you need to cry, you know, mm-hmm. you should cry, because again, energy is real.
Yes.
And that we mask our energies with our thoughts by presenting certain pictures and images of ourselves. And it's not authentic. You know, if someone feels like they need to cry, they should cry. If someone is angry, if you don't like what someone has done, now you may be confused, which is causing the source of that anger, but simply suppressing that anger and saying, well, I'm just going to look you in the eye and say, it's all perfect anyway. It becomes patronizing. And there's this disingenuous way that a lot of people interact because they think that that's what a spiritual person should do. And it's just nonsense. A truly spiritual person is just him or herself without any editing, without any censoring, and is simply going to be the way that that person is without trying to present an image to anyone else about what they think they should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And that's raw. It's honest. And, you know, for me, the idea of universal love is ruthless and uncompromising. It's not this love of, oh, we're all one, so let's all just love each other and like each other. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a difference between loving someone and liking someone. Mm-hmm. So I would describe myself as I love everyone and everything absolutely unconditionally. But mm-hmm. because it's unconditional, it also means that I'm not going to baby anyone. I'm not right. going to try and appease people, and I'm not going to try and avoid conflict simply because, oh, we're all one, so we shouldn't be in conflict with each other. But, you know, if someone does something that actually raises the energy within me of, I don't appreciate that,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell people, and I'm not going to try and present it in a way that's going to make them feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to tell them honestly.
Yeah.
And that is profoundly refreshing for people.
It is. Yeah. And it's when you are in that, when you're in that place and people know that you come from that place, then they, I feel like it just makes it so much easier to actually have true friendships with people. I mean, I had an experience not too long ago with a person who's a regular part of a circle that I'm in, and I'd helped out doing some assisting and a couple of times, and he sort of pulled me off to the side before the beginning of a gathering, and he said that he felt like the music that I had played at the previous experience had been, he said, I kind of felt like you were sort of really excited about singing in front of people and not actually really supporting us. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a really interesting piece of feedback. And it wasn't something I had been consciously doing, but I was really appreciative that we had that space of trust and honesty, and that he felt like he could tell me that. And, you know, I was able to take that into what I did the next time and just focus on support and focus on, and lifting everyone else up and on like singing harmonies to the person who was guiding the experience, as opposed to sort of like waiting my turn to sing. And it made it better for everyone else. It made it better for me in what I was doing. I was more able to be just fully present and be there for people to help them, which was what I was supposed to be doing. But I didn't even realize that I wasn't doing it before. So it's great to be able to have those kind of relationships with people.
Yeah, that's genuine friendship.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to serve you and serve other people more than someone just coming up and saying, oh, well, that was really beautiful singing.
Right.
You know, if they really felt like energetically there's something else going on here that maybe you're not aware of, and I'm going to bring this to your attention, they're doing you a favor, even if it makes you uncomfortable or makes you feel self-conscious in the process. You know,
yep.
Something that reminds me of is I must admit, I've watched some American Idol because my wife, Jesslyn, has been into it. And, you know, one of the things that you see a lot, especially early on when they're doing the auditions, is that you get these kids coming into audition for American Idol, and their parents have been telling them their whole lives, oh, you're such a beautiful singer. You're so wonderful. You have such amazing gifts. And the problem is that their parents are just placating them.
Yeah.
And actually they're terrible singers. And then they get in front of the judges and they sing, and the judges are just like, oh my God, this is so terrible. How do we tell this person? And then they tell them, like, you know what? You can't sing. And the person is destroyed.
Yeah.
And the problem is no one ever had the guts to be honest with them
mm-hmm.
before. And that is not love. That's not love at
all.
I agree.
The parents are thinking, well, I love my child so much, I don't want them to be discouraged. Well, be honest with your child.
Right.
Because your child's not going to make any genuine progress in anything if you're just saying, oh, nice try, I'm going to give you an award for that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not helping people. It's right. not helping them to achieve and to be the best that they actually can be. And then they're generating this false image of themselves. They're walking around in this bubble. Mm-hmm. They think that they're great at something. And then finally someone tells them, you know, actually, you're not.
Yeah.
And then their whole sense of self is destroyed. And so that's the setup. When we're not actually honest with ourselves and honest with people, we are setting ourselves up for an eventual disaster.
Yeah, I agree.
Whereas honesty early on can actually help that person improve, or if maybe they're just, you know, they're not going to be a good singer or whatever, then find something else to invest your energy in that actually is more suitable
Definitely.
For you. And then you're going to be happier in the long run. So it's hard in the moment. That's why people avoid it, is because it's hard in the moment, and all the white lies that we tell ourselves and each other, it smooths things over in society, but in the long run, it's not helpful.
Yeah, I agree. So let's focus more specifically or more personally on how does this philosophy influence your relationship with your kids?
Well, again, that's actually a really big question. let me go to this point. And I won't tell the whole story. Actually, I won't tell you much of it at all because it's a really long story. And I'll do a book plug at this point. If anyone really wants to get the full story, my latest book, which is a memoir, Being Infinite, goes into all the details. But anyway, back in 2007 when I was at Burning Man, and I was tripping mushrooms at the time, and some events occurred that forced me into a corner. Which, I mean, it was really hard at the time, but actually it was exactly what I needed. It forced me into an emotional and intellectual corner where I had to confront the fact that I had been married to this woman for 10 or 11 years at that point, and we had been together for some 15 or 16 years, and that the vast majority of that time I had actually been profoundly unhappy. Mm. And see, here's the thing. I hadn't been honest. I hadn't been honest with myself. I hadn't been honest with my wife. I hadn't been honest with anyone because I had constructed this narrative, this image of myself that I'm the nice guy, I'm the spiritual guy, I'm the understanding guy, I'm the guy who always wants to take care of other people's feelings. And so I never addressed the fact that actually for the past decade, I personally had been miserable.
Wow.
And so I'm sitting out on the playa, tripping mushrooms with my head in my hands, just like out there, like, oh, but what am I going to do now that I've really admitted to myself that I'm not happy and I don't want to be in this relationship anymore? At the time, my daughter was 5. My son was 5 months old,
Wow. You
know, a new child, and realizing I'm miserable. I don't want to do this anymore. And this woman kind of floats up to me and she starts talking to me and she's like, oh, well, what's going on? You know? And I said, well, I have to make a decision. No matter what I decide, something's going to break. And I don't know what to do. And she said, well, just look into your heart and do what your heart tells you. And no matter how hard it is, 10 years from now, you'll know that you made the right choice. And that really resonated with me at the time. I was like, well, yeah, I'm looking into my heart right now. And I am really unhappy with my life. And I need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so within a week after getting home from Burning Man, I ended up moving out. And the way that it was orchestrated that, you know, I sat my daughter down and I told her, and she's a 5-year-old girl. I mean, it's this little girl.
Yeah.
And this was really hard. And I had to tell her, I said, you know, I'm moving out and I'm doing this because I'm doing my best to follow my heart. And this is something that I need to do. And oh my goodness, just the look of horror on this little girl's face. I mean, she's looking at me and you can just see the realization of just absolute disbelief of, oh my God, how can daddy be doing this? And just, you know, the tears welling up in her eyes. And it was so hard. And, you know, that was part of what had kept me there, was that, you know, I had these kids and, you know, I was one of these people that I just don't want to make waves. I don't want to disturb anyone, you know, trying to keep the peace all the time because that's what a good spiritual person does. But in confronting the fact that actually this was making me miserable, knowing that I had to do something about it, that I resolved that no matter how hard this is for anyone else or my daughter or my wife or anyone, this is what I'm going to do because I need to do it for myself. And then in the years after that, so that I ended up moving up here to Ashland, Oregon. And at that time, I got involved with the Santo Daime Church and started drinking Daime regularly. Mm-hmm. And also got involved with a group called the Temple of Awakening Divinity and started working with 5-MeO-DMT on a fairly regular basis at that point. And I was going through this massive energetic transformation that was occurring. And then in interacting with my daughter, what I found is that, well, not just my daughter, but in anyone, that my tolerance for BS became non-existent.
Uh-huh.
That my commitment to truth and reality became so firmly entrenched that I just would not, you know, I wouldn't play the games mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. And this sent my whole relationship with my daughter into this tailspin because she was used to the daddy that would suck everything up and just play all the games and always try and appease other people. And all of a sudden, daddy wouldn't do that anymore. And it was so hard for her. And there was certainly times, especially in the early years of this transition into this new life that I was starting to lead, where I really thought that, okay, this event right here with my daughter, where I'm forcing her to confront truth, this could break my relationship with her, that she might not want to have anything to do with me after this point.
Wow.
But, and I knew, well, if I just play the nice daddy card with her, that it'll smooth everything over and it'll be fine. But my commitment to truth and reality was so firm that I couldn't do that. I could not bring myself to just say the things that she wanted me to say and be the person that she wanted me to be. That essentially I was forcing her hand with, look, Miranda, either you're going to accept that this is who your daddy actually is or not, but that's your choice. And I'm right here and I love you. And if you're ready to accept that, then we can have a relationship. And if you can't, then that's going to be your choice and you're going to have to live with that. And so there were several episodes where it really looked like she wasn't going to want to do anything with me. But she persevered. I mean, I really give my daughter credit. And, you know, today we don't see each other very much. We Skype every weekend. You know, she's down there in Santa Barbara and mm-hmm. I'm up here in Ashland. So, you know, for anybody who doesn't know their geography, that's about 760 miles apart.
Right.
So it's not like we get to see each other a whole lot in person, but our relationship is better than it's ever been. And I am able to be the father to her that I never would have been able to be before, because I was trying to be someone rather than be myself.
Hmm.
And so now I can also present to her a model of like, well, look, this is what it's like when someone is being true to themselves mm-hmm. and being true to what they honestly feel. And hopefully that will be a good model for her. And mm-hmm. so I'm really pleased with the outcome, but I got to tell you, it certainly wasn't easy. And,
right.
you know, there's always that nag in the back of your mind that, oh, just tell her what she wants to hear. Just I couldn't do it. And that's the way that I am with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm kind of a bubble burster
yeah.
for people. So, you know, I understand that I can be a challenge to people, mm-hmm. but I'm still a nice guy, actually.
And, you know, you're giving her tools to not end up in a situation that you found yourself in, where you weren't honest with yourself and made decisions that kind of put you in a corner. So hopefully she can learn from your mistakes. And, you know, as a parent, that's the best thing that we can ask, is that our kids can learn from our mistakes and not have to make the same ones, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not be stuck in those ruts, because of course children are learning their patterns of expression and behavior from their parents primarily.
Oh, yes.
And so if you've got parents who are just lying to themselves all the time, well, then that's going to help create children who are lying to themselves. You know, not necessarily. I mean, everybody's got their own choices to make. But it's the natural tendency that we see patterns around us and then we embody those for ourselves, and we get caught into these games that are being played because we figure, well, mommy and daddy are playing a game, and if I want to interact with them, I've got to play that game with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just something that, I won't do anymore personally. And that also means that I can't be with someone who wants to play games. Mm-hmm. And so that also with my wife, Jesselyn, there was just like with my daughter, there were definitely several time periods where it seemed like, okay, if I stand my ground, this is going to break the relationship. But I was determined that, look, I'm either going to be in a relationship with someone who is able to honestly take me as who I am and where I am, or I'm going to be with no one. You know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to acquiesce within a relationship for the sake of preserving a relationship. That's something that I will never do anymore. Mm. I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. And so if it becomes the breaking point, well, then it's the breaking point, and I accept that I'm not trying to preserve any particular outcome that I might desire, because my primary desire is to be honest. And if it's not honest, if it's not real, I don't want anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a very similar experience in regards to my professional life. I worked for a retail drugstore chain as a store manager for like 8 years, and I had sort of backed myself into a similar corner because I'd been 9 or 10 months since I had tried ayahuasca for the first time, and ayahuasca was a profound experience of healing for me. It has inspired me to follow this path of radical honesty that you've been discussing, and it also got me off of an 8 year alcohol kick where I just, you know, I come home from work every day and I couldn't not be drunk. And it was just that first time that I tried ayahuasca, it was just that desire to be drunk was completely gone. And I had an experience with an employee who had a way more serious alcohol problem than I had. And I wanted so profoundly to share the healing that I had experienced with her. But the context of the place that I worked prevented that from happening. It had a very draconian drug testing policy, and I knew that telling her, like offering this healing to her, or at least letting her know how I had this healing, would have put my livelihood in serious jeopardy. And when I realized that, I just said, I got to do something else. I can't do this anymore. And I got an offer for the place that I work currently, which is I'm the office manager for a holistic health practice. And I got an interview, and I went to the interview, and right before the interview, I had been on the local NPR station talking about the ESC and talking about my own healing from alcohol. And I figured, well, these are, you know, NPR listening sorts of folks. I might as well not pretend, because, you know, if I say like untrue things, they might go home tonight and hear the interview, and then they're not going to hire me if I'm a liar. So I just was really honest about who I was and the things that I do in my extracurricular life, and basically said, this is who I am. Take me or don't take me. And they did take me. And now I'm able to be, you know, open and honest with my coworkers about the benefits that ayahuasca has had in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to like have conversations with people about healing, and the people here are open to lots of different kinds of healing. So it's, you know, whether or not they are interested in entheogenic healing, to them, it's just like another sort of facet of the diamond, so to speak. And it's so liberating to be in that space. I took a pretty huge pay cut to come here, and it's just like the money just doesn't matter. Like when you're here and you're in the presence of, I can be my honest self, my true self, you know, that money is irrelevant in that case.
Yeah. And really something that you're pointing towards here is that this is the next wave of the civil rights movement, essentially.
Yeah.
That there's so many parallels between homosexuals and people who engage with psychedelics, because just as homosexuals have gone through this process of coming out of the closet and saying, hey, we're members of your community, We're fine people. We just want the same things that everybody else wants, and we want to be able to share ourselves and be open and be honest about that. There really isn't any difference with people who are in the psychedelic community, that so many people are living in the closet because they're afraid, because we have this completely asinine legal system that doesn't understand these medicines and treats them as, quote, dangerous drugs. And it's based on propaganda, fear, and misunderstanding.
Yep.
But there are huge numbers of people out there who feel that psychedelics are the most profound and important things in their lives, and that they get so many benefits from them. And so this is the next big coming out wave.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, just reflecting on Facebook about how many people on Facebook add me to their groups. I mean, it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. So I get all these notifications of somebody's posted in this group and you've been added to this group. And there's so many people that are trying to put together, we're not just trying, they're succeeding. They're putting together communities online of people who are engaged with this kind of work and who appreciate these medicines. And so this is the beginnings of this massive coming out movement where people are banding together, because, you know, since everybody had to practice their psychedelic whatever in private and in secret, that, you know, something that I get a lot of times from people is emails and things of people saying, I feel so alone wherever it is that I am, because there's nobody here I can talk to about that. Well, social media is now making it possible for all these people to talk to each other and to find each other. And these networks are being created, and people are fed up with the legal system, because it's absurd, it's unfair, it's fundamentally unconstitutional, it's a violation of our rights as human beings. I mean, there's just so many things wrong with it. I could go off on that for a long time. And it's something that needs to change, and therefore it is going to change.
Yeah.
And so this, for me, this is the next big wave of social change that's going to be happening. And it's going to center around the fact that we actually have a fundamental human right to these experiences, and no one and no body, no institution has any reasonable authority to tell us that we can't.
That there's
no justification for that whatsoever. Right. And so that's something that's going to change, because that's reality. Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing about being honest in reality. No matter what you think, no matter what you believe, no matter what propaganda or illusions you buy into, reality will always win in the end. And this is a fight about reality.
Yeah.
Because these are beneficial medicines that no amount of propaganda can cover that over, especially at this point in time with the internet and the sharing of all this information, that, you know, the cat's out of the bag. Yes. Reality is going to win. So I'm absolutely confident in that. And it might take a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not there yet. But in the long run, reality is going to win.
One of the things about like building community and stuff, it made me think of the first time that I met Dennis McKenna two and a half years ago or so. I was saying to him the exact same thing you're saying people say to you, like, I feel so alone and I can't talk to anybody about these things. And I said, I specifically said, I can't really talk to any of my friends about these experiences. And he just like looked at me and he just gave me this total deadpan face. And he said, well, you should probably just get some new friends then. And, you know, I thought he was just kind of joking at the time, like he's just trying to be funny. But, you know, I pretty much did. I just got a bunch of new friends and things are a lot better than they used to be. I don't have to pretend anymore, which makes things better.
Which is so hard. It's so hard to go around pretending all the time. It takes so much energy, and it's such a waste of time. Yeah. And, you know, people do it because they want to protect. They want to protect their job, their family, their status, their image, whatever it is. And my advice to people is stop trying to protect things.
Right.
Just be honest and suffer the consequences. And it might not be what you think you want, but at least it's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than protecting an illusion, at least you're living in reality. And it's that, in the long run, and even in the immediate sense, there's a sense of relief that comes with that. It's like, oh, I can just be real. I can give up this game that I've been playing that I can't win. So why have I been investing myself in this for years or my whole life? Just give it up.
Yeah.
Just give it up. Walk away. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I, I spent a solid year of serious medicine work just dealing with, you know, I had built up such this false edifice of myself to be in corporate America and be around like conservative religious people, and I had sort of built this wall of protection of inside my true self was there, and this sort of edifice of here's this person that I sort of play as like a puppet, and I sort of take him out and pretend that he's me. And my first year of serious medicine work was all just like reintegrating that thing that I had built back into like my real self, that who I was, and letting the parts of it that were completely plastic die. And, you know, and you do have to really experience death. You have to like put yourself into the consciousness of this golem that you've created, and it has to die, and you have to experience that death so that you can, you know, remember where you started from and remember why you built this thing in the first place and how stupid and a waste of time it was.
Yeah, because you built it because you wanted to be happy. And guess what? It didn't work. So let it go.
Right.
Let it go.
Yeah, definitely. So this is coming around to the last question I had for you, which was a number of people, as I've started this work around psychedelic parenting, have kind of expressed to me, well, you know, you should be more careful. You need to really guard your language and, you know, not be too honest in the sort of public sphere, because, you know, there's this drug regime, and and that drug regime is much more dangerous than these medicines can ever imagine or hope to be or not hope to be or whatever. And what do we, as, you know, I guess public psychonauts, what do we do? How do we navigate that space, you know, when it comes to the integrity of our families? And how much do you think that we should worry about, you know, attracting what Dennis said? He said it was the Sauron-like gaze of child protective services. How do you see that problem as it applies to this broader questions of like, you know, of keep maintaining the integrity of your family, but also this like ideas of like a religious freedom and cognitive liberty?
Well, it's a tough question, because certainly the state has the power to destroy your life. That there's absolutely no question about that. And so the state is incredibly dangerous in that sense. And it's vindictive. Mm-hmm. It's misguided. It is, you know, built on illusion upon illusion upon illusion. And, you know, that's the problem with these illusions, that they can still come get you even if they're illusions. So it's a really difficult call in that sense. And that ultimately it's something that people just have to judge for themselves. But the other side of that is that if no one stands up, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
And so someone's got to do it. And, mm-hmm. and personally, I mean, I'm not looking to be a martyr or mm-hmm. anything like that, but just like my relationships with my daughter and my wife and everybody else, that for me, reality is more important than anything that I would want to protect for myself and my own personal well-being and comfort. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not gonna hide in any way myself. Now, there's certain things that if people ask me, like on a podcast interview, that there's certain things that I will just steer the conversation away from, largely for legal issues. Mm-hmm. Overall, I mean, the way that I approach reality at this point is I don't worry about things. I deal with things as they arise, mm-hmm. when they arise, and then I deal with them however I'm authentically feeling in that moment. But I don't waste my time worrying about things. So I don't sit here thinking, whoa, well, if I do this, you know, maybe they're going to come get me. I mean, I've actually kind of given up any thought of that, because like, look, the emails that people send me and the communications that I have is like, look, if they want to come get me, that, you know, there's nothing I can do at this point cover my tracks or anything. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of too late in that sense. You know, which I still, I try and be a little bit careful, I guess. I mean, I don't know, but you know, I'm all in at this point.
Yeah.
And I love my family. I want to be with my family. The last thing I want is to end up in prison somewhere, because that would really profoundly suck. Because that's just not fun.
No.
But I'm not going to edit myself in order to avoid something that I don't have a certainty is actually going to happen. Right. Because that's a fear.
Uh-huh.
That's a fear. But I'm not going to let that fear stop me. And again, if people don't speak up about these things, well, then change isn't going to happen. And, you know, I've even done the same thing. I mean, not just with the authorities, but I've done the same thing with the psychedelic community, that I have a lot of disagreements with the way that things are discussed within the psychedelic community. I think that there's a lot of rampant illusions and projections and dualities that are going on in there, that I think a lot of it is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said that publicly. I've written that publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've received a lot of backlash from that, you know, in many ways, I'm kind of persona, you know.
Persona non grata, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that, you know, a lot of people out there don't like me because of the things that I say. And, well, too bad. I'm not going to stop saying them. I mean, I've literally had people write me emails saying, how dare you say these things? You should just shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, that's really open-minded of you, psychedelic community. So, you know, the psychedelic community, they suffer from as many illusions as any other community in many respects. And again, you know, I could sell a lot, you know, as an author, I've had to self-publish pretty much all of my books because publishers won't touch me because I say things that make people uncomfortable and I challenge accepted paradigms and illusions within the psychedelic community. So no one will touch me in that respect. And so I could tailor my message to be more appeasing to the public in that regard, but I'm not going to do that. In the same way that I'm not going to appease my daughter, I'm not going to appease my wife, I'm not going to appease my employers, I'm not going to try and appease the public. I'm going to say what I feel I need to say. And for the people that can resonate with that, great. And if that means I only sell a couple books a month and I can't get a publishing contract, well, that's the way it's going to be. Then it's not going to stop me.
Right.
And that's one of the great things about the internet today is that, you know, I don't need a publishing house in order to publish books, and I can put out my own podcast and, you know, I can even put on my own conference. If people want to invite me to their conference, I'll invite my, you know, I'll make my own darn conference and see how that goes. And so I've had to forge a lot of this completely on my own. So it's kind of lonely in that sense, but I'm not going to let anybody stop me because reality is more important than my own personal comfort.
Right.
And
there's lots of people already out there doing the comfort and coddle thing. I mean, that the market is saturated. You just have to go to, you know, the New Age or self-help section and any Barnes and Noble and to see that. And, you know, it reminds me of a quote from the movie Wayne's World, where Mike Myers says something like, you know, the Led Zeppelin didn't write tunes everybody liked. They left that up to the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's plenty of people willing to coddle their people's spiritual ego to make their millions, but are they really doing something for the world?
Yeah, and this for me, that's what genuine compassion is. Genuine compassion is being willing to help people with the truth or with whatever is authentic, regardless of whether it makes that person uncomfortable or makes me uncomfortable or causes difficulties for me, that is what genuine compassion is. And so it all circles back around to being honest, and that the truth is often very uncomfortable for people in so many ways, but that's what's going to allow them to be real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, for the people who are ready to face that and encounter that, it's so refreshing. It's like a glass of clear water after you've been dying of dehydration. It's like, oh, finally someone's telling me something real. All I've been getting is this fake water, and I'm still so thirsty. And you know, one of the reasons that people in spiritual communities, they're constantly jumping from one thing to the next. It's, oh, I've got to do this workshop and then this workshop. And then I've got to go and take this course. And then I've got to read this book. And then I've got to listen to this guru and that guru. It's because they're not getting satisfied.
Mm, yep.
Right? That yep. they're getting like, here's a glass of fake water. Let's all gaze into each other's eyes and tell each other how wonderful we are. And then let's go get another glass of fake water. And like, mm-hmm. no one's serving up the real thing.
Right, right.
And so there's a dissatisfaction so that people become addicted to their spiritual, whatever it is that they're doing. And they just get lost in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I 100% agree.
Yeah. And genuine compassion is helping people to not need that, to not do that. It's like, you don't need to do this. You don't need to jump from workshop to workshop.
Right.
Just be yourself. Mm-hmm. Be honest with yourself and live from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the like true spiritual teachers all are saying, you know, there's nothing that you need outside of yourself to find what you're looking for. You don't even need to find it. It's already here. But yeah. But it's so funny how many people are, you know, repackaging a message of you don't need anything for, you know, $299 or $19.95 in hardcover or whatever. It's mind-boggling the level of spiritual materialism that exists in the New Age culture. And I don't think people even really see it, which is, you know, they criticize mainstream religion, but, you know, at least, like, you know, mainstream churches let people come to church without paying for it. Like,
yeah, well, it all just becomes accoutrements of the ego.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I've filled my house with Buddha statues, and I've got my prayer flags, and then I've got my chakra thing over here, and I've got my altar and my crystals, and I've got this and that, and I'm listening to this podcast, and I've bought these books, and I'm attending this workshop, and I'm so evolved spiritually.
Yeah,
it's like, right. Oh my God, just let it all go. Where's the real you? Where is the real you? There's a spiritual clown walking around here, and I just want to see the real person
right
underneath. And so let's strip all that away. Show me the real you. That's all I'm ever looking for with other people is, where's the real you?
Indeed.
I don't want the image. I just want the real you. And that's all I'm ever giving people for myself is, look, you're going to get the real me whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
If you're going to interact with me.
Yeah.
And so for some people, that means they don't want anything to do with me because it makes them uncomfortable. So, well,
yeah.
Okay. That means I don't want you around me either.
It makes me think of a conversation I was having with one of my bosses, and she's been a massage therapist for 30 years. And she was telling me a story about when she first got started in the business. And this is back. She was, you know, she had, her husband was a college professor. And so she set up this little space in their living room and put a curtain up, and people come over to her house to get massage. And this was back, you know, in the days when people associated massage with like sex work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she said, and now we have this center and we have 30 massage therapists and people can get a prescription for a massage. And it's just, you know, and she was just like, she said that the thing that she loves about massage is that it doesn't require anything except her hands, you know, where she is right now. And I think that's pretty touching.
Yeah. You don't need to fill it with a bunch of other stuff, which
right.
sometimes people do.
Yep.
You know, no, just feel into the present moment and deal with things as they arise. Energy will show you what's going on mm-hmm. if you're paying attention. If you're not paying attention, well, then, you know, good luck. But
right.
if you pay attention, if you focus on what's happening rather than what you think is happening or what you think should be happening or what you want to have happen, and you just focus on what is actually happening in this moment, what energies are present, you stay focused on that, you attend to that, you will always do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Without any thought, just follow what's happening and it'll be right, whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah. Well, on that, Martin, I would like to say thank you so much for being on. It's been a great conversation. And I just want to remind everybody about exploring psychedelics at Southern Oregon University in Ashland this Thursday and Friday. Please come check it out if you can. We will be happy to receive you. So thanks again, Martin, so much. And we will be seeing each other very soon.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on. And I just want to say I really enjoyed it that I got asked a completely different set of questions than I normally ask
awesome.
when I give interviews. So it's been fun.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.